Welcome to Voice of the Cape Drive Time. 0723807120 is our WhatsApp number. Feel free to query, comment, or criticize. Let's have a look at Brexit. British Prime Minister Theresa May enters the most delicate and dangerous negotiations of the country's split from the European Union as she searches for a compromise with her political foes that will deliver a Brexit deal. With just 10 weeks to go to deadline, May is prepared to blur her red lines to find a plan that will get through Parliament, say reports. That could mean keeping closer ties to the EU, an outcome backed by opposition parties. Last night, May survived an attempt to oust her government in a vote of no confidence, 24 hours after her agreement with the EU was emphatically rejected. She immediately opened talks in an effort to break the deadlock and must return to Parliament to set out her plan B by Monday. To understand all of this, we've got Maddie Thimont-Jack, a researcher at the Institute for Government based in the United Kingdom, and she is part of the Brexit team. Maddie, welcome to the show.
Hi, good afternoon.
Just very quickly, just some absolute basics before we start talking about Brexit. What exactly is the European Union and Britain's part in it? It sounds like a silly question, but from a distance in South Africa, Brexit looks very confusing to us.
Mm-hmm. So in 1972, the UK voted to join the European Union, which is a collection of, well, it's now 28 countries in Europe, which has they agreed to establish a commission, a European Parliament, and a European Council made up of representatives from each of the 28 member states. And essentially what they've decided to do is work together in certain areas to facilitate cooperation, to enable close trade across borders, to cooperate on security, to cooperate on setting very similar regulations and standards, which again feeds into being able to trade easily across those borders. So as I say, there are 28 member states. In 2016, the UK held a referendum and the people of the UK voted by 52% to leave the EU. What then has been triggered is a two-year negotiating period, which was triggered on the 29th of March 2017, by which the UK started to negotiate with the other EU 27, so the other 27 member states, certain issues around what it means when the UK leaves. So the key issues that they had to deal with first was how much money the UK needs to continue to pay to the EU after we leave. So as I said, there's a big budget that the EU uses to fund a lot of the programs that they run. So we have committed to continue to pay into some of those, given that we've made those commitments as a member state. We've also had to negotiate how we're going to protect citizens' rights who are living in other countries. So a big part of the EU is something called freedom of movement, where citizens in each of the EU member states can go and live freely in the other 27 member states. So the UK and the EU have committed to continue to protect the rights of citizens who have made that decision to live abroad. And then finally, one of the big issues, and this has been the key stumbling block in Parliament, so actually trying to get this deal through Parliament, is about trying to ensure that once we leave the EU, there will not be a hard border on the island of Ireland, because Northern Ireland is part of the UK and the Republic of Ireland is part of the EU. But in the 1970s, there were sort of what's known as the period of the Troubles, so the 1970s and 1990s, where there were sort of terrorist attacks both in Ireland and in the UK because certain people in Ireland some people in Northern Ireland wanted to join with the Republic of Ireland, and certain of them, another group wanted to stay in the UK. So we're trying to, the purpose of this deal is to try and ensure that actually there won't be a new border erected on the island of Ireland, to try and protect that peace process that was finalised in the end of the 1990s. So that's sort of, I think I sort of started with what the EU does and then what some of the key issues are that this first stage of Brexit has been focused on. And then the next stage, once the UK does leave, if the UK does leave, then the UK will need to negotiate a future trading relationship with the EU.
Okay, so what motivated 52% of the citizens of the UK to vote in favor of leaving the European Union. Surely, looking at the situation from the distance, there's more advantages to being a member of the EU than not being a member.
So there definitely are advantages to being a member of the EU. In particular, it enables the UK to trade very freely with 27 other countries in the world. It reduces tariffs and it reduces it maintains certain standards and regulations, which again facilitates trade. The reason, I mean, it's difficult to say precisely why 52% of the UK voted to leave. And one of the key issues that arose a lot during the referendum campaign was the issue of immigration. So, being a member of the EU means that people in other EU member states, the other EU 27, can move easily and freely without visas or anything like that to the UK to work, have families, and to live here. And there are about 3 million EU citizens currently living in the UK. So what a lot of people think is that actually it was a frustration with the number of immigrants coming to the UK is what motivated quite a significant portion of the UK to vote leave, and particularly in areas where it's not doing as well economically, so the sort of trying to find jobs is more challenging, and so that you can see there was quite a big divide between people living in cities and also people living in the country based on how they voted. So people in cities and more in areas of actually quite high immigration tended to vote remain, or at least again better economic situations tended to vote remain, and then people in poorer areas of the country were more likely to vote leave. And as I say, that the view is that that was down to a fear of immigration, but there are also multiple other reasons that some people didn't like the role of non-UK institutions having a say over the UK laws, and that was also something that quite a few people were motivated to vote leave as a result.
It's interesting stuff, but if we pare it all down, it sounds to me almost like a case of xenophobia, fear of immigration, which is not just a problem that's confined to Britain, it's confined to many parts of Europe, ironically, and also even countries like South Africa. Is it as simple as xenophobia, a fear of the other?
I think it's difficult to... I think the thing with it is that, as I said, there are multiple reasons that people voted to leave. Immigration is seen as one of the big ones, but it is a bit more complex than that. Essentially, the UK made a decision to not be part of the same institutions as other European countries or other EU countries, but the Prime Minister has made statements saying that she still wants to work closely with the EU, to have a close relationship with the EU. But I do agree. I mean, the sort of fear of immigration is something that is definitely not confined to the UK. I think you can see that trend has spread across a number of countries across the world. And as I said, it is seen as one of the motivating factors for why the UK voted to leave.
What happens to the 3 million EU citizens currently in the UK? Will they have to return home? People are even saying that the Premier League, the soccer, that a lot of teams might have to dump international players. I mean, this is the kind of talk that's doing the rounds.
So the government has actually committed to protect those rights of those 3 million EU citizens. So the deal that the UK government has currently agreed with the EU would protect those rights and say they can continue to stay. They can apply for something called settled status within the UK, which says that they'll have a right to live there because they've been living in the UK before we left the EU. And actually, the government has also gone further and has now said that even if we leave the EU without a deal, so if this withdrawal agreement, this legal treaty that has been currently agreed with the EU but hasn't been agreed in Parliament, if that doesn't happen and the UK leaves without this deal, then the government will again respect the rights of EU citizens living here. As long as they can prove they've been living here before the 29th of March 2019, they can apply and get something called settled status. The challenge is that actually for UK citizens living in other EU member states, that's a choice that each member state, each 27 country will have to make themselves as to whether they protect the rights of UK citizens living there. because that's something the UK cannot do by itself, and it actually needs each government to make a decision to say that they can continue to stay there.
It's certainly been a season of hell for Prime Minister Theresa May, particularly the vote in Parliament, an absolute disaster, and now the fact she has to come up with Plan B. What do you think is going to be the Prime Minister's next move in terms of servicing what everybody's calling Plan B? What are the conditions going to be for that?
Well, I think I'll start by saying, which is, I think, something that everyone in the UK feels at the moment, is that I don't honestly know. Few people know what's going to happen. So I'll sort of caveat by saying that we will have to wait and see the reality. But the way I see it is she has a few options open to her. So the first is to try and address the areas of the deal that her backbenchers don't like. In particular, this agreement that Northern Ireland rules and regulations will stay very close to the rest of Europe, even after we leave, if a future trading relationship cannot be negotiated with the EU. That's this Northern Irish backstop, which is something a lot of MPs are unhappy about. So she could try and renegotiate aspects of that to address some of her MPs' fears. Unfortunately, she cannot do that by herself. The EU would have to agree to renegotiate, and currently they're saying that they aren't open to that. So that, while could be one option, it doesn't look very easy and doesn't look very likely that she'll get much further with that. Her other option is to look at the focus on the other part of the deal. So we've got the withdrawal agreement, the legal treaty, dealing with some of the withdrawal issues. But they've also agreed something called the political declaration on the future relationship. So this is a 20-page document sketching out high level, this is what we want from our future relationship with the EU. And it's on this document that the EU have said they're more willing to negotiate. So she could try and, you know, discuss. She's already said she's going to talk to some of the opposition, leaders of the opposition and opposition MPs, to see what Parliament might support. And so she could try and make changes to that document, because it's not a legal text, it is just political commitments. She can try and change some of those commitments to reflect what MPs might want. So whether that's actually a softer Brexit, is the term that we tend to use in the UK, so a closer relationship with the EU, that could be one option to try and persuade MPs from other parties to actually vote in favour of her deal when it comes back to Parliament.
Yeah, softer Brexit. It sounds quite good. In fact, it sounds like a compromise to me, which I'm sure compromise means everybody's equally unhappy, but at least the middle road has been reached. You know, the Northern Ireland question has got all of us quite fascinated. If Northern Ireland stays part of the EU and no agreement is reached, does it mean that Ireland will become what people call a hard border? In other words, people will have to produce passports, they'll have to get visas, for example, to travel from London to Londonderry, for example.
So the commitment, the point of the backstop is to avoid that situation, in the sense they want to avoid a hard border on the island of Ireland, so between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland, which is part of the UK. So the commitment isn't to keep Northern Ireland in the EU, but they will be, the commitment is to follow a lot of EU rules and regulations so that they can continue to trade across the border. So, for example, in dairy farming, there's a lot of movement of cows across the border, because you might have your farm on one side, but you might have your processing plant on the other side of the border. And because up until now it's been quite integrated, and there have been very integrated supply chains within the island of Ireland, it hasn't been a problem that you're actually crossing into a different country to do that. So the point of the backstop is to make sure that these issues won't continue, will not be reintroduced. But the other big commitment is to ensure that there isn't a border between Great Britain, so the sort of Scotland, Wales and England, and Northern Ireland, because at the moment there's the Irish Sea between the two parts of the UK. And the UK government has said that they will also try and maintain as close as possible to some of the rules of the EU during this period, to ensure that there don't have to be checks on goods travelling the other way. There will never be a situation where you need to have a passport to get from London to Belfast or Londonderry, as you suggested. Northern Ireland is part of the UK, and that is the situation for the moment, and that isn't planning on changing anytime soon. But the point is to try and ensure that there's a ease of cooperation with the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland to protect that peace process that was established in at the end of the 1990s to make sure that violence does not return. And there's a fear that if you have checks and borders and border posts on the island of Ireland, they could become a target for certain groups who are opposed to Northern Ireland being part of the UK.
Maddie, where does British politics go from here? We've seen a tremendous amount of division, dissatisfaction, no confidence votes, resounding defeats. It certainly hasn't lacked drama. Where does British Prime Minister Theresa May go from here? We've heard that she will probably step down once she's signed a Brexit deal. But where does the politic itself go? Will there be an early election? What's the future in that regard?
I mean, again, you're asking for me to look into a crystal ball that I'm not sure holds many answers. I think what you can see, or what we can see here, is that this whole process has put a huge amount of strain on British politics. It has put a lot of strain on the two main parties, so the Conservative Party, which Theresa May currently in power, Theresa May is prime leader rather than prime minister, but also Labour Party, the opposition, because where traditionally politics has divided along sort of left and right, where there are clear, it's divided along party lines, so one party will support one issue and another party will support a different one. Whereas Brexit has done the opposite. It actually cuts through both parties. So you'll have people who wanted to stay in the EU in both in the Conservative Party and in the Labour Party, as well as people who wanted to leave the EU. So that's been the big challenge for British politics over the last 2 years, is how to manage that, which is why when Theresa May lost the vote on Tuesday, she lost 112 votes in her own party. And, you know, in total, there were 317 Conservative MPs. So she lost a third of her MPs because Brexit is such a divisive issue within her party. And I think that's the thing that will end up being something both parties need to grapple with, is how to work out whether it makes sense to stay as one big party, whether there are going to be factions that go off and form different parties to better reflect some of their interests, particularly around the EU. Those are the slightly existential questions which are facing some of the parties. In terms of immediately what will happen about whether there'll be an election or not, I would say that's something that's definitely not been ruled out. Things are changing quite quickly at the moment. And if we get very close to the 29th of March and there isn't a deal, and the risk of leaving without a deal, which is something a lot of MPs really don't want to do because that will be very damaging to the UK's economy, if we get to that point, then you might find more MPs will be willing to vote in favour of a general election to try and elect the Prime Minister on a mandate where they say we're going to have another referendum maybe on EU membership, or we're going to decide to stay in the EU. So I would say anything could happen. A lot was up in the air. Theresa May, there was a vote in her, a confidence vote within her party before Christmas, and she won that, so that her party can't force her out until December this year, but she could choose to step back down or resign if she feels like she can no longer lead the country through Brexit, and in which case, then, you know, anything can happen, really. It's all to play for at the moment, to be honest.
Maddie Thimont-Jack, research at the UK Institute for Government, helping us to understand the complexities, the drama and the divisions of Brexit. Maddie, all that we can say, good luck, and let's hope that there's some light through all the smoke, mirrors and chaos. Maddie Thimont-Jack, thanks for chatting to us.
Thanks very much.